Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Morning, everyone. So, my talk today is about Fudo Myo-o and dealing with obstacles as we head into Rohatsu, the observance of the Buddha's enlightenment. Sitting in retreats has often felt like moving from fall into winter. In early fall, there's dense foliage. Then leaves detach and fall here and there. And before you know it, we're looking at bare trunks and limbs. As a group in retreat, we move away from our relative lives, then slowly letting go by following the form in sitting zazen together. We embody the immovable. With the leaves falling of our relative concerns, of reminiscing on the past, fantasizing about the future, and even releasing concerns about the present and meditation practice. Winter lets us see the essential because the world for a time is laid bare. In our proverbial winter of practice is a time where we can see what is essential without all the distractions. This analogy might make it sound like session is an easy process. However, dropping can take quite a bit of energy. As we work through strong emotional states, resurface life struggles, and feelings of doubt, or a lot of what Larry Yang calls moments of non-awakening. Rohatsu session is a solemn time of sitting into the wee hours. It is also a time where people embody great determination and go for it. It celebrates Shakyamuni, who sat still and unmoved in the face of temptation and fear until he realized enlightenment. I appreciate how archetypes, symbols, and stories hold teachings in the parts and also as a whole. Each part makes up or is not separate from the whole. So with the Buddha's life, leaving home, dissatisfaction, and facing Mara are all importantly connected to this enlightenment story we celebrate. To add a secular lens, Joseph Campbell wrote in A Hero with a Thousand Faces, "For the symbols of mythology are not manufactured. They cannot be ordered, invented, or permanently suppressed. They are the spontaneous productions of the psyche, and each bears within it, undamaged, the germ power of its source." The phrase "germ power of its source" brings to mind how the capacity of what emerges from a source is also not separate from that source. Like fruiting mushrooms in a forest are part of a vast underground mycelium field. Some of the mycelium can be a whole forest in size, one organism. What is the germ power of your or my source? Is it the same as Shakyamuni's? Like the immovable Shakyamuni, Fudo Myo-o is another symbol of being immovable in our tradition. Fudo Myo-o, or in Sanskrit, Akalanatha Vijaraja, is the central object of an altar to the left of our main altar here. So right over here. Fudo, as we often say, or Akala, means immovable, steadfast, or non-moving, referring to the unwavering quality of bodhisattva, or bodhicitta in Sanskrit. Dr. Sampa Biswas, in her book devoted to the art and iconography of Fudo in Japan, this is this one right here, which is one of my main sources. Really appreciate the work put in there. According to her book, She elaborated that in the mandalas of Shingon Buddhism, Fudu is the chief of the Go-Daimyo-O, or five Vijaya Rajas. So mandala, as a term, is a cosmological representation or synthesis of distinctive elements and a unified whole. Raja in the Vijaya Raja means lord or king, and Vijaya relates to valid knowledge, or knowledge of true reality, or wisdom by which all things are known. So Daitoku, another figure in our tradition, is also one of the Go-Daimyo-O. Sometimes these are translated, these five are translated as kings of light, dharma protectors, wisdom kings, or wrathful deities, depending upon how they're being used when it's translated. Fudo's hair often hangs down to the left shoulder, symbolic of being a servant, and sometimes this hangs with seven entwined curls or knots representing the seven bodhi angas, or seven factors of enlightenment discussed in the Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra. The seven are mindfulness, dharma inquiry, a happiness not connected to pleasure, energy, tranquility, equanimity, and meditative concentration. So the factors of enlightenment are connected around service. As another aspect of servitude, Fudo's lower tooth is pointed up toward and pointed upward, and this represents the strength of desire to progress upward in service of Bodhi. And the upper tooth is pointed downward in compassionate concern for others. So despite this fierce-looking quality, there's this great other underlying aspect of service and compassion. Fudo's blue, but sometimes black, red, or yellow body is fiercely facing forward in seated or standing position and facing demons, obstructions, and even the hard to teach. I'll just say from, you know, within myself. With bulging eyes, protruding teeth, a rope, and a sword, Fudo protects the Buddha Dharma and practitioners, as well as dispels what is antagonistic to enlightenment. Fudo's sword, Ekin, the sword of wisdom, is not ordinary wisdom, but wisdom that cuts through deluded and ignorant minds and the most complicated of karmic knots. It is a symbol of protecting the doctrine, but also triumph of valid knowledge over wrong views. As a wrathful lord of uncontradictable truth, Fudo manifests the liberated or non-dual quality of anger, which is clarity akin to righteous indignation. Fudo is absorbed in a fire-producing samadhi that burns defilements and obstructions. Fudo is often accompanied by 2, 4, 6, and sometimes up to 48 child body dojis. Doji means it's like a class of attendant or servant. Sometimes messengers or disciples are there carrying out the tasks and duties of Fudo. So in discussing or talking about Shakyamuni or Fudo, I think for myself it's been helpful to apply it to myself and to my practice in my life, not so much as outside of myself. Although there are various ways to unpack the symbology, let alone practices such as there's a seed syllable mantra, I want to continue just on this immovable aspect of Fudo and how that relates to facing karma that arises. The word immovable sounds good for a fence post or a foundation, but sounds more like stuck or stubborn for a human. It reminds me of being perseveringly quiet or frozen as a child during a solemn church service or in a dentist chair, or getting a vaccination in the rear with my pants down to a nurse. Paintings and also sculptures place Fudo on these very on these visually tiny mounds with very little room for even a step. There's this visual sense that there is nowhere to go or nowhere else to escape to. Despite this claustrophobic perception of lack of space, immovable opens up more space versus shrinking it, relates to opening with the heart and mind, and a shift of perspective from the phenomena, to the space. And you are still here, edited by Jiko, right over here. Kyogen offered this. Through time spent in Zazen, our perspective shifts from the phenomena that moves through body and mind to the space that it moves through. As we shift our perspective to the space itself, a profound change begins to happen in us. So the rock where Fudo stands is actually symbolic of unshakable peace and bliss. One obstacle to realizing this in my life has been when I'm oriented as if practice is not here, like it is out there to attain, or in the past, or coming soon. So Sesshin is starting at 7 p.m. in the Zendo tonight. Zazen practice happens after the kids leave to school. Shohaku Okamura adds one that I really liked. I don't like samsara, so I am practicing to reach nirvana in the future. A few lines from Dogen's Fukan Zazengi come to mind here. The vehicle of reality, that's capitalized, the vehicle of reality is in the self. Why should we waste our efforts trying to attain it? Still more, the whole body is free from the world's dust. Why should we believe in a means to sweep it away? The way is never separated from where we are now. Why should we wander here and there to practice? That was Shohaku Okamura's translation from his book, Realizing Genjo Koan. I like that it was different than the one we recite. The immovable is only here, not separated from this present intimacy. In addition, sometimes trying to be immovable like the Buddha or Fudo was, for me, trying to achieve an idealized state, a state free of vulnerability, craving, pain, or confusion. How is immovable determination more than just a cognitive exercise of cutting thoughts or blocking emotions, if not some form of spiritual bypass? John Wellwood, who coined the term spiritual bypass to describe a process he saw in himself and in his Buddhist community, stated, "I noticed a widespread tendency to use spiritual ideas and practices to sidestep or avoid facing unresolved emotional issues, psychological wounds, and unfinished business. We tend to use absolute truth to disparage and dismiss relative human needs, feelings, psychological problems, relational difficulties, and developmental deficits." He goes on to discuss the trap. "I see this as an occupational hazard of the spiritual path, and that spirituality does involve a vision of going beyond our current karma. So practically, how do we go beyond and also face karma?" Fudo has a coiled laureate, or lasso rope, a kinsaku, a versatile tool that can lead beings into self-control by binding passions and ignorance. But in its greatest sense, the lasso ropes, draws in, and then anchors beings to awakening. The lasso also snares demons in order to protect the Buddha and Dharma. In Japan, one often finds wrathful protectors at the entrance gate to temples in the same protection of Buddha. What does it mean to protect the Buddha of this moment, the awakened one? The lasso brings to mind how sometimes I have to bring back the self that wants to run away from the present, so I don't skip out on making friends with what troubles me. Maybe it could be considered an intimacy lasso. Zensho Susan O'Connell posed a question: am I really fearless if I am not intimate with my fear? In the Abhaya Sutta, the Buddha addressed a questioner about the fear of death by saying, a monk who has abandoned passion, desire, fondness, thirst, fever, and craving for the body will not fear death. Are we able to abandon these if we are not intimate with them? From my own experience, I had a period of several years of panic attacks. These went from several times a day to occasionally, especially after I began understanding them, when I stopped avoiding them and controlling conditions. For a time, I almost settled into agoraphobia, which is a fear of leaving, not being outside. And when I said, I'll let you panic, have 15 or 20 minutes each day, and then the rest of the day is mine. When there is underlying anxiety, sadness, shame, or fear in my present experience, can I bring awareness to and be with the sense of insecurity of the situation and unknown future? To be intimate with those things and not pivot to one of the various distractions that have been available to humans since ancient times, not to mention those that are so present in our modern, mobile, connected, and technological times. Just like, I need a lasso just for my cell phone. It's like gotta have its own lasso. When I sense the parts in the whole, maybe the symbols and germ power of Fudo, it reminds me of the three pure precepts coming together as one. The first is cease from evil, release all self-attachment. The second is do only good, take selfless action. And the third is do good for others, embrace all things and conditions. Fudo's lasso, sword, and samadhi producing flames are not simple symbols of protecting the self and the false refuges of my likes and dislikes. They are about liberated functioning in service from this immovable place. Some 535 million people, or 8 to 10% of the world's population, are technically Buddhists. Consider that at this moment, or even this period of the day, or for others, night, there is an uncountable mass of people setting intentions to practice for and with all beings, or dedicating the goodness and the merit of their breaking through obstacles for the benefit of all beings. An even greater, uncountable amount may be facing suffering head-on and have no thought of their work on our collective karma. Much of this effort is spontaneously arising from our inherent nature, like mushrooms fruiting from a great mycelium field. Today, I'm not sharing an esoteric teaching or all the various ways that Buddhists practice around Fudo. Sometimes I have made images of Fudo, like prints, but mostly my practice with Fudo is simple. I have just been attending here for years, and together with our Sangha, bowed, made offerings to, and chanted the Fudo Myo'o Dharani, maybe several thousand times. I see this as honoring that power and energy that is available to all of us. It is ours individually and collectively. The energy to remain immovable while meeting karma skillfully and in service. I will end with the Fudo Myo'o Dharani, which Jiu Kennett placed into English. Hail to the mandala, let us so be engulfed within its praises evermore, that by our own wills and vigilance may we our fetters cut away, may we within the temple of our own hearts dwell amidst the myriad mountains. Hail, hail, hail. Well, that's my talk. questions or comments from your experience of practice around Fudo and online and in-house.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and alternate between the Zendo and Zoom. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, you can go ahead and type question or comment in the chat box or place it in there in its entirety and someone will read it. And we have one in the Zendo.
Hi, Sosets. Thanks for your talk. Fudo has been one of my main men for a long time. For me, it's been a question of great determination, I think. That immovable quality has to do with staying put in the face of that you speak of, that desire to run away. I have lots of good ways to run away. And that fierce aspect is like, so sometimes in practice, I've had this sense that I just have to go, and stay put. And because it's that difficult, it's that challenging, it's that sort of intense to just stay with it. So I really appreciate you bringing this forth, because I think that is, for me, it's been a very important part of how I've been able to break through a lot of that, those obstacles. Mm-hmm. And that sense of, and I've also experienced Fudo as a protector, which is, you know, you say it's not so much a matter of taking refuge, but for me, Fudo has been a refuge. I've had this sense of maybe even an arm and a sword in front of me, kind of mm-hmm. holding off the bad guys or whatever it is that I'm, you know, worried about. So I think one of the things I really love about iconography, this kind of stuff, is that you can find a way to, or at least I have found ways to almost put this, there is a way that I put this outside of myself and say, okay, Fudo is now protecting me. And eventually I realize I have that protection built in. Mm. But I almost have to start with it elsewhere and call on it for help. And that seems to work all right for me. So I think everyone finds their own relationship to this stuff. Mm. So I appreciate what you've said here today. Thank you.
Yeah, I also like that you brought in this, like, you did it, you know, like, visually with your body, but sometimes there's this kind of part of, like, for fierce mama bear energy or something that says, you know, you're pushed, or at least I'm pushed over enough, like, whether that's part of myself inside or outside, and I just say, stop, this is not true, this is not okay, but sometimes it's not that I've been thinking about it, it just comes up. Like, time to protect this moment here.
Yeah,
that's great.
Zoom is clear.
Having those bad days or bad thoughts don't help, I've noticed. And then talking to other people, like where they had their bad days and listening to what they have to say and where they made their mistakes, makes me feel better knowing that you can change and you can get better and there is hope. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a great comment. You know, I couldn't list all the times that I had bad things that were unpleasant. There's so many stories that could be in here. You know, you're limited to 20 minutes. But I think that's also why I really like the story of Shakyamuni. And just, it's not just about the enlightenment story. It's about how tough it was beforehand. And that's us too. Yeah. I feel together too. Yeah.
It will clear on Zoom.
Thanks, Sosets. Fudo has been more real and present for me this term, and I've wanted to learn more about Fudo, and I just have, and I'm grateful.
Anything you want to share about what you just learned that relates to you?
Well, you drew my attention to a couple aspects that I hadn't noticed before. And one is the size of the thing he's standing on, which is useful to think about the different implications of that. And you drew some of those out. And you said that the flame that he's standing is in is of samadhi. And I hadn't realized that. I'd been thinking of it like a really bad situation. Like you're standing in a really bad situation and it's flaming hot and you're just standing there. Mm. So it's interesting to also think of that as samadhi.
Still clear on Zoom.
Thank you, Sosa. It's good to see you. Some time ago, when I was coming around here, Chico once tried to explain Fudo to me and why he's in the hall and the calligraphy here in the Zendo and what that representation, you know, Fudo versus Kanzian. It's like, Kanzian, sure, but what? This fierce dude. You know, and one of the things that Jiko mentioned was, you know, Fudo stays there through it all in these flames and remains fierce as protection and maybe as some other kind of symbology. We could throw a lot on it, I think. And recently in the sacristy, we were doing some clean out and there was some old broken pieces of the wood representing flames. And I took them home and I put them in my garden and one of the flames is right behind my little statue of Kanzian by the bird bath. And I look at it every day and it's just a reminder of that protection. And also I need like really 3D reminders of be here in this present moment and just please practice that. I think it's really easy to forget that, especially if there's something unsettling or there's been some sort of tragedy or if you, you know, got a cold and you feel like crap. You know, it's like, oh no, this is going to go on forever. You know, what have I lost? When can I get back to everything? You know, and that's kind of universal. For all of us right now, it's not just being sick for a week with a head cold. Would you like to comment on any of those things or add more? Thank you.
I liked a lot of what you said. One thing that comes to mind is that there's a reason why a lot of things are where they're at, that there's, you know, Manjushri up here and Kanzian. And I think a lot of times coming into practice, for years, I didn't know what any of them were, and it wasn't really important to me at the time. It just, it's fine. And then at some point, you know, investigating one would increase my sense of wanting to practice with that. Most of them come back to some very simple things, though. Be present. You know, there's not a wide range of Buddhism. This, like, almost a lot of them come back in different forms and how you, like, mix it up. I also like that you talked about just applying them to colds or something. I think when it's something more intense, like a breakup, divorce, or panic attacks, it's easy to go, I've got an enemy in front of me. I think the harder part to work with is more of the underlying day-to-day, like chip, you know, going on and saying, hey, I want to protect the space of clarity here. In my day, and maybe that'll allow me to be of more service to others. Maybe I can meet the next moment of what comes up, or even what's inside that's grieving or needs to be attended to.
Thank you for reminding us about why we do this. and all of the retreatants at Ruhatsu this week, I wish that for all of you to remember. We took the precepts not just for us, but for all beings.
Yeah, and as a reminder, the whole community, whether they are in retreat or not, are in or can be celebrating Ruhatsu. Just as much at your home, working with children, or at work, we can still come back and, you know, be present with our karma and with just this next moment. Yeah. That can be celebrated just as much elsewhere as, once again, that our practice is here, wherever the self moves, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, there's a question, sorry, there's a question from Natika, if I have that name right. It reads, I have a question. I appreciate you sharing the story of overcoming your panic attacks. Can you offer any advice for staying present and encouraging as I support someone who experiences severe anxiety? I find myself becoming discouraged some days.
Yeah. So get, you know, there's many different ways, but my experience, I didn't get a lot of support. And then later I realized it was really helpful to get support from others and talk to others. Particularly, I'll speak from my own space of panic or high anxiety, was that some of what comes up at the same time is a sense that we're going crazy, that we're can't, that we won't, that that will not dissipate, that it will continue with us all day long and all night long, that there's no break from it. And I think some part is to just keep working with it and get support from others who have worked with it, especially when it's in its extreme forms. And you know, sometimes they take a lot of strategies of body, strategies of mind, to really meet them. I'm not sure if that exactly answers all of it. That was a, like kind of a collage of what came out of my mind. I think one of the things that I, in my own experience, I only once in a while have a panic attack, and it's like comes up when I'm like sleeping, or it's very strange. But now, like it sits there, and I start to feel a flooding experience, and then all of a sudden I say, "Ah, here's that thing that I haven't seen for a while," and then I kind of developed the tools to go into that. And at the same time, I know that that might mean I've got a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress going on. And for some people, biologically, we can't have that much caffeine either. Caffeine is very related to like some of that too. So it's another very relative answer. I wish you a lot of luck because peace in that, because it's one of the most unsettling experiences to have.
Thank you, Sosetz. You mentioned a bit earlier on that talking about like being stuck and like some examples of that from your life. And I guess what I'm wondering is, like, how do we know that Fudo isn't stuck? Mm-hmm. Does he have a choice? Could he step off his little mound and out of the flames if he wanted to?
Well, our symbols relate to a way of thinking about our reality. So they're kind of stuck in the spots that they're in as a symbol. But in thinking about how that relates to your life, you know, sometimes that being in the moment and sitting feels like and has a real experience of, oh, this is really open and spacious. And sometimes it feels like it really shuts down. It's like, I'm controlled by my parents. I'm controlled by the system. I'm controlled by the amount of money I have or a lot of other things that are those external conditions. And I think the shifting of the space and the shifting of perspective moves towards not the smaller things, but actually just the space and things coming in and out of them. I'm not sure if I hit you there on that one, but sometimes we feel stuck, but then the general teaching is that that also is ephemeral in passing. It too does not have lasting power. And that's really in the symbology of that the immovable one is about the mind of awakening, the present mind. Yeah, Chico.
I would add too that part of what these three are symbols of our vow. There's a vow of hearing the cries of the world. There's a vow of sitting in wisdom. And there's a vow of determination. So, in that sense, there's nothing stuck. There's no possibility of being stuck because we make the vow over and over and over again. And of course, we can choose not to. But that's sometimes what I see is not this will protect me, but this is my opportunity to for this aspiration of immovability.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? Or this is great.
Thank you.
What time do we usually go to in these? Like
11:10:15.
Okay. Take a one or two more.
Clear on Zoom.
All right. So we're gonna go up to the altar. Oh yeah, okay, there we go. Thank you. Initiate the habit pattern.